More jobless claims.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for joining me as Marketplace covers the fallout from the financial crisis. I know you're getting tired of hearing bad economic news. Unfortunately, there isn't any other kind at the moment. This morning, it's about unemployment benefits. More than 500,000 people have filed for them, another 32,000 in the past week. Dana Saporta is an economist at Dresdner Kleinvoort.
If we look back at previous recessions, 516,000 claims number like we got this morning is even higher than the levels we saw, say, in 2001 and in the early 90s. In general, this recession is shaping up to look something more along the lines of an early 1980s shortfall.
Saporta says GDP could contract by 3.5% this quarter, the most since the early 80s. President Bush will visit Wall Street today. He wants to give a pep talk about the free market and how it's still the best system. I'm sure he'll get a lot of questions about that, like, what free market? So far, governments around the world have pledged $4.6 trillion in bailouts and stimulus packages. And Wall Street still isn't buying. More losses this morning, although small ones. The Dow is down 23 points to 8,259. The NASDAQ is down 13. The S&P 500 has dropped just a point. In Asia today, though, the markets closed 5% lower, and European shares are down about 1%. Congress was told its rescue package would be used to buy up toxic mortgage assets on bank books. But as you know, yesterday, Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson said that won't work. Now, Paulson wants to spend $50 billion on the consumer debt market. We're joined by our correspondent Steve Henn in Washington. Steve, exactly what are we talking about here?
So banks aren't the only institutions that lend to consumers. Credit card companies, auto financing arms of the big automakers, but also like CarMax, they all lend to consumers. And when they made those loans, they would then bundle them up and resell them to investors, just like mortgages were bundled up and resold to investors as bonds. And the market for those bonds based on consumer debt has just simply frozen.
So the $50 billion from the rescue package, where is it going?
Well, reports are that the Federal Reserve will use that money to begin to attract private investors. And then they'll set up sort of a pool of cash to invest in these bundles of car loans and credit card loans. And people will buy that as investments.
And how is this supposed to benefit the economy overall?
Well, consumer spending is obviously a huge part of the American economy. And as we've seen over the last few months, consumer spending has really slowed down. Part of it has to do with the fact that if you have a credit score below 700, it's tough to get a car loan these days. If they can unlock the credit markets for consumer debt a little bit, more people might be able to make purchases they'd like to make.
All right, Steve Henn in Washington. Thank you.
Thank you.
Listening to the Morning Report for Thursday, November 13th on Marketplace.org. Congress will have plenty to talk about when it goes back to work on Monday. And it's not just the car makers wanting help. Nearly 300 companies, from drug companies to food makers, are asking for help with their pension funds. Here's Elisa Roth.
This story actually starts 2 years ago when President Bush signed the Pension Protection Act. Among other things, it says companies with underfunded pension plans need to contribute more money to them. These days, though, there are an awful lot of defined benefit plans that are underfunded since their values have dropped along with the stock market. The companies that fund those plans, like Kraft Foods, Pfizer, Ford, and Boeing, are worried that paying up will cost them jobs, or worse. Alicia Minnell directs the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. She says that's probably no exaggeration, so Congress might just be willing to listen.
We have seen enough companies on the brink of bankruptcy. I think Congress might want to offer some temporary relief.
In the long term, though, she says to look for new rules, ones that would let companies contribute more when times are good and cut back when they're not. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
It still costs more to make things in the U.S. than overseas, but a study out today says that gap is narrowing. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler has more on that.
The National Association of Manufacturers studied the cost of doing business in the U.S. compared to nine other countries. It shows that the U.S. manufacturing sector has kept a lid on employee benefits and health care costs more successfully than foreign competitors. Emily DeRocco is president of the Manufacturing Institute, one of the report's sponsors. She says other costs continue to put U.S. manufacturers at a disadvantage.
We're paying the second highest corporate tax rate in the world.
That would be about 39%.
This corporate tax rate drives U.S. costs up and limits our ability to be competitive with our products across the global marketplace.
DeRocco says the corporate tax rate in the U.K. is 30%, and in China, it's 25%. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
This morning, Walmart reported a better-than-expected profit for last quarter. But that's about the only positive news you're going to hear coming out of the retail sector anytime soon. Here's Stacey Vanek-Smith.
We know it's going to be a long, chilly Christmas for retailers, but just how bad is it going to be? Retail consultant Bert Flickinger predicts shoppers will spend $20 to $30 billion less this year than they did last year.
Last time we saw sales so soft was during the big retail recession of the early 80s.
Flickinger says nobody is being spared. Nordstrom's, Best Buy, and Ann Taylor have slashed prices 30 and 40%, sales they usually reserve for the post-holiday shopping season. So who is doing well? Flickinger says discounters who are offering something extra, like H&M, which is launching a line from posh designer Comme des Garçons today.
As consumers are moving from full-price stores to off-price stores, U.S. shoppers are starved for deep discount stores like H&M.
And Kmart and Walmart. Flickinger says their aggressive advertising campaigns and promotions have been very effective with this year's stingy shoppers. I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith for Marketplace.
I'm sure you've heard the business term leverage. It's really just a fancy word for borrowing. So deleveraging should mean paying the money back, right? And not so much. Maybe it's time we consult Sally Herships over at the Marketplace Decoder.
Leverage has gotten a bad rap recently. But David Byme of Columbia Business School says borrowing isn't a bad thing.
If people are willing to lend you money, you can do more. You can buy more things.
But it can get out of hand. Byme said that's what happened in the early 2000s with the housing boom.
You could get money. I think I got something like 4 5/8%. It was really a cheap rate.
And it wasn't just people borrowing big to buy houses. Companies borrowed to buy competitors. Investment funds borrowed billions to buy mortgage-backed bonds. Many of them borrowed way too much.
We call it leverage because being in debt makes good times better, but it makes bad times worse, sort of like alcohol.
Imagine buying a $1 million home with $100,000 down. If the home appreciates 10%, you double your money. But if the value of the home falls 10%, you could lose everything. Some investment companies borrowed 30 times what they had in the bank. They bought mortgage-backed securities, which was fine when the value of those bonds was rising. But when they started to fall, the companies stood to lose a lot of money, and it was time to deleverage.
There's only two ways to do that. One is to build up more capital to meet the assets, or to sell off the assets.
Building capital, or making money, in other words, is tough when the markets are sliding and the economy is in a recession. So investment firms have to sell, and the more bonds, stocks, and loans they sell, the more they have to lower the prices to find buyers, and that brings all the markets down.
Trouble is, there's not enough hands to hold all the assets that we've created. So the world is having trouble deleveraging all at the same time. We can't all deleverage because somebody's got to buy the assets we're trying to sell.
It's not just the investment companies that are in trouble. David Byme says the average American household borrows 24 times what it earns. Most of the stuff that we've bought with that money is declining in value. And as we slip into recession, it's getting harder for us to keep up the payments on our debt. And that means we need to deleverage, every bit as badly as the banks do. In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Have you ever seen the movie The Third Man? It's a 1949 film starring Orson Welles. There's a famous scene in it where Welles' character Harry Lime talks about the difference between Switzerland and Italy.
For 30 years under the Borgias, they had warfare, terror, murder, and bloodshed. But they produced Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, and the Renaissance. In Switzerland, they had brotherly love. They had 500 years of democracy and peace. And what did that produce? The cuckoo clock.
Our economics correspondent, Chris Farrell, brought this to my attention. Chris, Harry's not exactly right. Lots of things have come out of Switzerland. But what's your point here?
Well, it's always been one of my favorite metaphors for entrepreneurial capitalism. The turmoil and all the stress and the innovation that comes out of the competition in our system. And so we're going through, in case you were wondering, Scott, we're going through a tumultuous time.
Oh, really?
A lot of uncertainty.
Thanks for letting me know.
Yeah. I just want to let you know, I think this phrase, you know, worst financial crisis since the Great Depression, you know, that's out there. So there's a sense that, you know, the Federal Reserve going forward, they need to stop us from going through bubbles and busts and all this turmoil. And I really worry about some of the wisdom that's coming out of this current period of time.
Well, is there evidence that our boom and bust history has produced those periods of innovation, if that's what you're getting at?
Yes. If we look at the dot-com boom and bust, I think I have a very strong story there. We created the internet future incredibly fast. All this investment went into creating the internet and building these telecommunications networks. And we tried all these business models, and some of them went under, but others like Amazon.com, they were incredible. And then the Fed comes in and, you know, they kind of prevent a recession from becoming too bad. And so this is okay. This time around, it's a little bit of a, am I being too much of a Pollyanna? Has something really changed here? Because the downside is so scary.
Are you saying that there's going to be some kind of financial innovation?
Absolutely. We have an innovative financial system. We don't want to crush that innovation because it's very easy to sort of say, oh, you know, this innovation, it's very dangerous. Well, what about money market mutual funds? You know, 25 years ago, money market mutual fund was an incredible innovation. What about equity index funds? Innovation in the financial sector has been important to our economic growth. It went out of control in recent years. Again, the simple story is the Fed's just simply going to prevent this from happening again. If there's too much exuberance, they're going to step in and they're going to say stop. And what I worry about is sometimes real good comes out of bubbles. And as Harry Lime said in that quote that you started our discussion off of, you know, you end up with the Renaissance, not a cuckoo clock.
All right. Chris Farrell, our economics correspondent. Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
What do you think? Share your thoughts with us online at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.